Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
To the families of special needs children all across this country, I have a message for you. For years, you've sought to make America a more welcoming place for your sons and daughters. And I pledge to you that if we're elected, you will have a friend and advocate in the White House.
Sarah Palin in her nomination speech at the Republican convention. And as we've started doing this week, we'll keep following up on some of the things we heard in our time at the conventions. And today we'll dig a little deeper in looking at the potential impact of a Palin election when it comes to children with disabilities and their parents. Of course, Palin is an advocate on this issue because of her son, Trigg, born 5 months ago with Down syndrome. So what do actual working advocates of children with disabilities and their parents want from government? How much are they getting it? How much have Democratic or Republican policies supported these things? Joining us now is Patricia Bauer, a former editor at The Washington Post and LA Times. She now runs a website, PatriciaEBauer.com, that compiles news and commentary on disability issues. Also with us, Brian Scottco. He's a physician at Children's Hospital in Boston, and he sits on the board of the Down Syndrome Society. He also has a sister with Down syndrome. So, Patricia and Brian, welcome to WNYC. Thanks very much for coming on with us on this.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And, Patricia, in the 10 days since the Palin nomination, I'm assuming there's been a serious uptick in the level of interest in Down syndrome in this country. Overall, is her candidacy a good thing for the cause?
Well, I think that what's important here is that we're at an unprecedented moment in American history. It's really a first to have a candidate in a major political party who has not only has a family member with a disability, but is openly talking about it and including this family member as a part of a what, to all intents and purposes, appears to be a happy, regular American family. This is, from the standpoint of people within the disability community, this is seen as a great opportunity to build public awareness and show the public at large that people with disabilities are valued and valuable members of families and communities.
So what would it mean if she's elected vice president for Sarah Palin to keep her promise? What would it mean to be a friend and advocate for children with disabilities in the White House?
Well, one of the things that we have been observing is already happening. She talked about families seeking to make America a more welcoming place for their sons and daughters. I think that the fact of her public engagement on this is already starting those wheels to turn. It's challenging people's presumptions and preconceptions, both about Down syndrome and about disabilities in a more general way, and welcoming the families of people with disabilities into the broader American community. Then, if you want to go beyond that, you could talk about the prospect of a Republican administration, or even this brings in the Democrats as well, of an administration presenting a more accurate image of people with disabilities, being an ambassador to the public, breaking down barriers, focusing attention on the need to modernize the tangled bureaucratic governmental system that often prevents people from receiving the services and funds to which they are entitled. And the fact that Sarah Palin has brought the center stage means that the disability community will then be able to use this as leverage to work with both the Republicans and the Democrats to get specific information about what they are prepared to support, which could include things like enhanced federal funding of special education or regulatory changes to support people with disabilities in the workplace or regulatory reforms that would effectively help people with disabilities move out of institutional settings or move out of family settings mm-hmm. and live independently in the community.
And I've got a long list of specifics on activists' legislative agendas here. I'll just go down this list a little bit so people know what some of these things are. There's a small budget bill currently before Congress that I think we found out about from your site that would fund outreach programs to parents who've just received a Down syndrome diagnosis.
Let me stop you there. That's not exactly precise. It would provide information to families who receive a diagnosis of a disability either prenatally or after a child is born.
Okay. And from the Wall Street Journal, parents say also there is a need for housing and employment programs and greater access to Medicaid and best practices clinics and a national registry of people with Down syndrome and tax-free savings accounts for their long-term care, since life expectancy is approaching that of healthy children. So who pays for their lives is really an issue. Dr. Scottko, let me turn to you. What do you hear from parents, either with newborns who are just starting to deal with this in terms of that outreach proposal, or as life goes on, in terms of what they want from government policy help ease the burden on parents or on the individuals themselves with Down syndrome?
When parents first receive the news, it is a shocking moment for them, whether they get a prenatal diagnosis or a postnatal diagnosis. And what I've learned from mothers around the country is that the way that the doctors deliver the news is often not consistent with the realities and the possibilities that we know exist for people with Down syndrome today. We know that mothers say that doctors present an incomplete, inaccurate, and sometimes offensive portrait of Down syndrome as they're choosing to make a decision on what to do with their pregnancies. But what I've also learned with all of my patients who have Down syndrome, and from my own sister, is that they're valuable, productive, contributing members of society. And what mothers and fathers across the country have said is after they get through those initial moments of shock, they learn that joys nestle in that extra chromosome, and they recognize and appreciate that a person with an exceptionality brings some exceptionality to their families. And I think what they're looking for is a society that welcomes and appreciates the diversity that comes in genetic variation, a society that has laws and regulations that allows people with Down syndrome and other disabilities to be given the same education as their counterparts without disabilities, be given the same employment opportunities and the same living possibilities as other people without disabilities.
Doctor, do you know, or is this outside your expertise, to what extent prenatal testing and legal abortion have changed the way society views Down syndrome? Because I've read that as many as 90% of women who receive Down syndrome diagnoses for their fetuses have abortions.
That is correct. We know of those women who receive a definitive prenatal diagnosis, like Sarah Palin, and there's only a small number of women who actually go down that route to get a definitive prenatal diagnosis. But those who do, 80 to 90% of them will choose to terminate their pregnancy. And based on the advent of prenatal screening, there have been some statistical modeling that has been done that's shown since 1989, there's been about an 8% decrease in the number of babies born with Down syndrome. But with that said, the CDC has counted this past year, and Down syndrome remains the most common chromosomal condition, occurring in one out of every 733 children, meaning that over 400,000 Americans have Down syndrome, living long, healthy, productive lives with one person with Down syndrome 80 years old. So certainly the times are changing with the advent of medicine.
Can you give me...
If I could just interject there, the other thing that's really important to notice is how the lives of people with Down syndrome have changed just within our generation. Years ago, people with Down syndrome had an average life expectancy of only 9 years, and that was largely because they were institutionalized. They were deprived of health care, deprived of education, and deprived of any kind of loving relationship with a family. So naturally, they did not do well. Nowadays, they get education, they get health care, they're living in the communities with their families, and they are thriving and blossoming. They're increasingly graduating from high school, they're holding jobs, they're living in the community, and their life expectancies are shooting into the 60-plus age range and are expected to go higher with, as Brian mentioned, this fellow in Minnesota who just celebrated his 80th birthday.
So here is a comment that I will warn you is kind of harsh from our comments page, but I suspect that the writer is not the only person thinking this. And it says, please discuss how a child with disabilities is a known liability for society. Special education, group homes, and medical care are very expensive propositions, and it's unlikely that the parents of the child, Palin's or not, will bear the cost of very much of it. Fiscal responsibility, smaller government, and reduced social programs are Republican core issues. How do these square with deliberately giving birth to a disabled child? Wow.
You know, it's a provocative question, one that I oftentimes hear when I'm giving speeches about Down syndrome, and I go back to the research and see what the research shows. And we know that educational research has actually shown that in inclusionary settings, that is, in a classroom that is done correctly and has all the resources, where someone with Down syndrome is co-educated along with people without Down syndrome, that the people without Down syndrome actually get a better quality education as rated by their parents. So somehow having someone with a genetic difference in an inclusionary setting, when all the resources are in place, actually have a positive benefit for the other students. We also know that people with Down syndrome have a protective factor on marriages. Parents who have a child with Down syndrome are less likely to get a divorce than other parents, and certainly that comes as a cost savings to families and to society as a whole. And we also know, based on employment research, that people with Down syndrome and those with disabilities are more dedicated employees, less likely to take time off and more dedicated at their jobs, and certainly that results in more productivity in the workforce.
And of course, I think that question raises, you know, a whole litany of eugenics implications, in that it's offensive at that level. Would you then look at people, you know, children who would be born to poor people or others who are statistically more likely to become burdens on society, and say, well, they should be aborted? So, I mean, that's a real slippery slope argument, the way the writer put it. But there is the question of when life begins that gets into this. And Doctor, I wonder if you can shed light on why Sarah Palin, if we accept her pro-life stance and that she would never have had an abortion herself, if we accept that, though some people are saying, well, the reason she, you know, didn't show for 7 months or covered it up for 7 months is because she was holding open the option for herself. But who knows? Taking her at her word, why would somebody who would never get an abortion bother to be tested with the amniocentesis, which she did?
It's a great question, Brian, and actually there's an increasing number of women out there who are choosing the same path that Sarah Palin chose, and that is women want to be prepared. So there's a growing number of women who say, I am going to continue the pregnancy no matter what, but I want to know as soon as possible whether or not my fetus has Down syndrome so I could become prepared both emotionally and with the facts. I want to know what services I need to have in place. I want to connect to local parents. I want to make sure I have my doctors in place, and I want to be ready to go. And based on my research, where I surveyed mothers around the country asking, how did you get the diagnosis prenatally or postnatally, those who had received a prenatal diagnosis and chose to continue their pregnancy like Sarah Palin said by the time their birth came, the birth was a celebratory moment, that they had worked through their emotions, they had gotten their information, so when the time for the birth came, they were ready to celebrate a new addition to their families.
And if I could just interject. Also, I through my website, patriciaebauer.com, I speak with hundreds of women across the country who have people with Down syndrome in their family, and they are increasingly distressed by the supposition that having a person with Down syndrome in your family automatically is proof that you are in some way a person who has a particular point of view on Roe v. Wade or on pro-choice, pro-life issues. People with Down syndrome are in families, people all across the political spectrum with a wide range of views. They should in no way be interpreted as indicating something about the politics of their family.
Well, we know Sarah Palin's politics, but choice means choice. Choice doesn't mean you have to abort a baby, a fetus with Down syndrome. Choice means you get to decide rather than the state. But before we run out of time, and we have Richard Cohen, Washington Post columnist, standing by to talk more about the presidential race, Sarah Palin's record when it comes to this, we know at least that Alaska agreed to almost triple its spending on special needs children to about $74,000 each beginning in 2011. I gather she didn't help draft that legislation, but it's going to take effect in Alaska. But Patricia, has this traditionally been either a Republican or Democratic issue? We know that Edward Kennedy has long been an advocate for children with special needs. Would Palin have to break with her party's history in order to keep her promise and be an advocate in some of the ways that the advocates have asked for from government?
Well, actually, we're talking about apples and oranges here when we talk about state funding for education versus federal. The federal funding for special education flows through the IDEA, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, was first enacted in 1975. And when it was enacted, the Congress specified that the federal government would foot the bill for 40% of the cost of special education for students in schools. And there are 6 million students with disabilities in public schools in the United States. Since that original legislation was passed, that promise has never been kept. It's never even approached 20% or half of what the federal government promised. Both the Republican and the Democratic candidates have pledged to make good on the government's promise for funding of special education costs.
Is there a block? Is there a large swing vote, people with disabilities block that could actually help her electorally, or is it just too small?
Well, let me talk a little bit about history.
And we've got about half a minute left
here. Okay, the first President Bush reached out to people with disabilities in his acceptance speech, and when he won, it was said by pollsters that half of his margin of victory could be accounted for by votes of people with disabilities. So anything can happen.
Huh. Wait a minute. Jim in Manhattan wants to make the case that Republican policies do not jibe with this. Jim, go ahead. I'm going to give you 20 seconds to do this, right to the point. You're a lawyer?
Sure. I'm a lawyer, and I work in the area. I think it's great that Sarah Palin is presenting her family and that side of thing and suggests support. But Senator McCain, while he's been somewhat responsive, has been opposed to the Community Choice Act, which would allow individuals with disabilities to live in more integrated settings closer to their homes. And he's been a big supporter of the conservatives on the Supreme Court, who have narrowly interpreted and wrongly interpreted the ADA on multiple counts.
Patricia, can you confirm?
At the same time, Senator McCain is one of the co-sponsors of the ADA revision bill, which would change the aspects of the interpretation of the ADA that you're referring to. And as far as the Community Choice Act, I think that the appearance of Sarah Palin on the scene means that all bets are off, and it's quite possible that people within the disability advocacy community are going to be renegotiating those past positions, and we're just going to have to wait and see.
Patricia Bauer writes patriciaebauer.com, which compiles news and commentary on disability issues. Brian Scottko is a physician at Children's Hospital in Boston and on the board of the Down Syndrome Society. Thank you both very much for an important conversation.
Thanks
Thank you,
for
Brian.
Having us.
And Richard Cohen, columnist next. More on the presidential race. Stay with us.